Hey everyone, welcome back to New Slang. I am music journalist Thomas Mooney. This is episode 165 of the show, where I'm joined by Nathan Mongol Wells and Joshua Ray Walker of the Dallas country garage rock band Ottoman Turks. Their new album, the aptly titled Ottoman Turks 2, is out this Friday, March 5th. And if you've been listening to New Slang for a while or skimmed through the back catalog, you'll remember solo episodes with both Joshua and Nathan these past few years. So yeah, I'm glad we were able to get both on this time around for this conversation. The power of email and Zoom. I just really love the space in which the Ottoman Turks they occupy. Definitely one foot in the world of honky tonk and country drinking songs, and the other squarely in garage rock and punk music. There's definitely a heavier, darker sludge that's happening from time to time on this new record. Probably the best example of that is 35 to Life. But I was thinking about this earlier. Bear with me a second. It's less of a sonic comparison and more of the attitude and feel and energy. So back in the 80s, Joe Ely and The Clash, they went on a few tour runs together. Most folks, though, they thought that was like, you know, just a juxtaposed mix. But in reality, that just made so much sense. Ely was a rock and roller at heart. You could say that in a lot of ways, he played country music because he was from the country. And The Clash, well, what can I say about The Clash that isn't already said? You know, at one point in this world, The Clash were the greatest band making music. Obviously, there are some distinct differences between the kind of songs that Joe Ely and Joe Strummer wrote, but they just were a perfect pair. And the Turks are right there at that intersection. You know, fast forward a couple of decades, but it's in the same ballpark. That brand of punk storytelling and that country attitude. Cowboy hats and leather jackets, which also don't dismiss punk music as never having narrative. You'll miss a lot of really great songs that way. Long story short, this new record is great. As much as I love that previous one, I honestly think that I like this one a little bit more. Songs like Wound Up, 35 to Life, American Male, Rootless Tree, they're all so great. And yeah, I think you'll love it as well. Again, Ottoman Turks 2, out this Friday, March 5th. Today's presenting partner is our pals over at Desert Door Texas Soto. If you're asking yourself what exactly Desert Door or a Soto is, well, it's a premium, high-quality spirit that is similar to a tequila or a mezcal, but in my estimation, it's more refined, smooth, and fragrant. It has a distinct and intriguing palate that picks up on hints of vanilla and citrus while maintaining a healthy earthiness that is quite enjoyable. One of my favorite features about Desert Door is just how versatile it really is. If you want to feel fancy and a little highbrow, it's perfect for a variety of cocktails that call for lime wedges and coarse salt, chopped ginger, agave nectar, sprigs of thyme and sticks of cinnamon. If you're down to muddle some fresh fruit, all that kind of stuff, it's perfect. It's great for experimentation and fine-tuning all of your mixologist skills. And then also, if you're a little bit more down-home and casual, you got that denim jacket on. It's just perfect for those short and sweet, simple go-to favorites that hit the mark every time. I'm talking about Ranch Waters and Moscow Mules and Palomas and Mexican Coca-Cola with Desert Door. What I love so much about Desert Door is just how genuine and authentically West Texan they are as well. They go out and harvest soto plants out in the wild and are aware and knowledgeable conservationists at heart. So next time you're at your neighborhood liquor store, get yourself a bottle of Desert Door. I'll throw a link into the show notes for more information.
Before we get started, I do want to mention a handful of things real quick. One, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't just yet. Leave a 5-star review over on iTunes. Two, check out the merch store and the Patreon if you're wanting more New Slang content. Three, most of y'all already know this, but in case you don't, you know, I'm primarily a writer. My latest Q&A feature is with Charlie Crockett, and that is over on Holler. He just released an excellent new album this past Friday called 10 for Slim, and it's a tribute to the late James Slim Hand. Yeah, head over to holler.country if you want to take a look at it. Four, if you're into 90s country music, check out the Neon Eon. It's a weekly podcast where I interview and discuss music of that era. Previous guests have been folks like Clay Walker and Pam Tillis, and this week's episode, it will be with Sarah Evans. All the links, they will be in the show notes. I should note something really quick. This episode is nearly 2 hours long. I thought about cutting it, but Honestly, it was so fresh and organic, it just makes sense as one. Since we are on Zoom though, there are a couple of moments where Joshua or Nathan, they cut out or step away for a second. It's never at the same time, but yeah, just a heads up. Which, let's get on into the episode. Here is Joshua Ray Walker and Nathan Mongul Wells of Ottoman Turks. It's going good now.
Recording.
At the very beginning, like whenever everything was shut down and they were gradually starting to open things back up, Blue Light actually opened back up as like they couldn't sell beer for a while. They were having so much trouble where they were opened up as BYOB, and that was the weirdest fucking thing. Was like people bringing beer to Blue Light, and of course, like instantly they had to make rules like, no, you can't bring like two coolers. And
I was gonna say that seems like a dangerous thing to do.
Like,
yeah. Everyone just shows up with a Yeti,
like that was the like they like you gotta buy, I guess, like ice and like mixers here if you're drinking liquor. But like, yeah, try not to bring 260, like 30 packs, 60 beers for yourself.
Sounds like a great time. Hey, we're going to tailgate down at Blue Light today.
Yeah, it's like that. Or like I was expecting people to start selling beer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, set up shop and like,
oh, I'm sure that happened on the side.
Yeah.
Like the guy who we just ran out. Y'all got some more? Yeah. For 15 bucks or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, silver bullets, a dollar.
Yeah. And it felt so weird and bad and wrong bringing in my own beer into Blue Light. Yeah. I went like one night and I was like, oh, this feels wrong. Let's just move past it. I'm sorry, guys.
I'll come back when it's normal again. Yeah.
If you're buying discount alcohol outside of a bar you usually drink at, there's no way anything good is going to come of it. There's a guy who sells liquor out of his trunk at strip clubs in Dallas. And if you ever find yourself buying a bottle of Crown Royal out of that guy's trunk, you're bound to have an awful night.
Yeah, something's already gone wrong before you even got to that point, I think. Right. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you just get thirsty.
Sometimes that's the only place to find alcohol at 3 a.m.
I feel like that's not even like one mistake that led you down that road. Series. There's like
at least nine mistakes led to you being in that parking lot at that moment.
Yeah, that's sure. Like when the movie is like playing and like it's this incredible action scene and then it does that freeze frame and it's like, you're probably wondering how I got here.
Right.
That's like that moment right there. And then we learn why.
I will say that that's like, you know, the benefit generally, like, I don't know if you call it settling down, but getting, having a significant other sort of helps you question those sorts of decisions, because you know you would never turn to your whatever it is, you know, even just having a buddy there sometimes helps, because you wouldn't be like, hey, this guy's got liquor in the trunk of his car and we were thirsty, like we should, like the just saying it out loud I think helps you understand, oh no, this is, let's maybe go home, you know, or whatever. Significant others definitely help you sort of navigate some of those troubled waters.
Oh, for sure.
By saying no, you know, are you an idiot? Like,
that's true. I haven't eaten a hot dog from a strip club buffet in years because of that.
So. Yeah. 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 Things like that.
My life is on the right path again.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, I mean, Ottoman Turks drummer Paul Anoho, he sort of thrives, I think, on 7-Eleven hot dogs. That's a regular meal. And he just got engaged. So I think she enables him in that degree. Maybe we need to talk to her about that, and then she'll talk to him, and I don't know, see what we can do.
See, the Allsup hot dog, I don't know if like I'm like going – I don't know if it's one of those like that's beneath me or something like that. I wouldn't eat a hot dog at 7-Eleven, but in saying that, like anytime I pass an Allsup's, it's like, oh, I have to go get a burrito. And like,
well, yeah,
is there really any difference? It's the same thing.
I don't know. Also maybe. Sort of more of a neighborhood grocer, I think, than like a 7-Eleven is.
Oh, you're saying it's a little bit more classy. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Yes. You know, I wear my bolo when I go to the Allsup's that I around Texas, but
7-Eleven's definitely there's my dog. 7-Eleven's definitely a bolo off.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Situation. Although, I mean, you can't really go wrong with a QT hot dog. I love 7-Eleven.
Yeah, QT's upscale for sure.
QT hot dog, pretty nice.
They like actually roll, you know? It's not just like sitting there 7-Eleven sort of vibrating.
Just sitting there like, yeah. Come on. There's too much hot dog grease to let the rollers move.
Yeah.
See, I think all the 7-Elevens here in Lubbock, they turned into something else now. Like there used to be a few 7-Elevens here and they're, I can't think what their names are.
Interesting.
But
we lost them.
The last time, like I went to, last time I was in Dallas was when I went to the Belmont to do that story on Paul Cawthon.
Oh yeah.
And he told me
fancy one, huh?
Yeah. And he was like, before you leave, you have to stop at that fancy 7-Eleven.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I felt underdressed when I walked in because that thing
place is nuts. Yeah.
That's a black tie affair. They got turmeric Slurpees there. You know, it's
good for you.
Like 30 different beers.
I think I don't the first know how time I feel I went about was that. With you, Josh. We went and got those Laredo tacos there, and
I'm pretty sure that's the night Tom's talking about.
Oh, you're right, because that was Paul was playing at Belmont. Yeah.
Yeah,
we
all ended up at the same 7-Eleven. We ate bad tacos and then went to the Belmont.
Drank 40s, I think.
Ran into you, which we weren't expecting. That was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, that was such a – I think like that was probably the funniest thing I remember Paul talking about because, of course, it's like, you know, oh, coming to do a story on Paul and the Belmont and this record and like – of course, like if someone is coming to do a story like that, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, the light is on me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was probably Paul at his most rock star. But at the same time, he's also like, hey, go check out that 7-Eleven. And that's when I was like, that's like the old Paul I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, when in Dallas, you go to the fancy 7-Eleven. Now that's I think true. They're all over, right? Or like there's at least more of them. I think I've seen actually there's more in Dallas even, but.
Yeah, that was like their flagship to see if anybody wanted that.
Which and is funny because it was like an abandoned, like desolate gas station. The kind that you drive by as quick as possible just because it looks as sketchy as, you know, you've ever seen.
Right. Like, I'm going to run out of gas on the way home. And you pass that and you're like, I'm just going to run out of gas on the highway.
It had like a spray painted sign on the front, like, we have gas or something. You know, it was terrifying. So it's funny they turned it into something so fancy.
Yeah.
Courtney used to work at Belmont, so I would pass it all the time. Or we would pass it all the time. She would pass it more than me because she worked there.
I think this is all tapping into something that we've all talked about before, and that's like the gentrification of places. I know you and I talked about it last time you were on back in, I guess, around this time last year about some of this stuff. That sounds exactly what gentrification is. It's putting fancy 7-Elevens in places.
Right.
What I was going to ask though was like, obviously being out on the road, where are your like go-to stops? I know like there's plenty of people who are like, oh, Buc-ee's is always the place. I've never been to a Buc-ee's because they're not out here in West Texas, but like, where is your go-to stops?
I'm sure Josh has. Yeah. Josh, I'm sure you've got like he's pulling out his little notebook. He's got, you know, well, when you're in Kansas, you got to go to the, you know,
it's true.
Big Jim's.
No, I do.
Four-way
I have my favorite truck stops all over the country, but generally my brand of choice is Love's.
I do love Love's.
You know, this is heresy because I live in Texas, but you know, I don't like being pressured into liking certain things just because I'm from here. Buc-ee's is a gas station. That's all I'll say. It's just it's another gas station.
The way that I always judge like truck stops is how quick can you get out of your car and into the bathroom? Because exactly. Usually that's and why you're stopping to begin
and
with.
And that's not Buc-ee's.
Buc-ee's takes forever, you know, and you're lucky if there's not a crowd.
But there's a ton of stuff there. Like if you're looking to go to a gas station to have a good time, maybe go to Buc-ee's. If you just want to use a clean restroom and get back to your car as soon as possible, go to Love's.
Yeah. I will say Buc-ee's has some sort of like potato chips that they make there, I guess, or I don't know if anything's actually made at Buc-ee's, but they're like really, really good warm potato chips. Oh my gosh. You know, like real potato, like shaved off and fried. Oh, pretty good.
Some of those tornado twister tater.
Sort of, yeah, taters. But they're not all twisted up. They're just sort of like potato chip. I don't know. They're good.
I've never had those. I've had a lot of Buc-ee's stuff over the years.
What are the things that they are known for? Those
beaver nuggets.
Yeah. I've never had those, I don't think.
I've had them. I didn't get it. As many things that people love, I try them and I go, oh, that was fine.
Yeah.
And then I have to pretend to love them forever.
Yeah. See, again, like just they're not even, I don't even know where like the furthest west Buc-ee's is, but they're like not anywhere remotely close to where I live. And right. So it's not like I've passed a couple of in different places, but it's not like been, oh, I need to go turn back around. As you said, if you need to go to a gas station, if you're looking for a gas station to hang out at or to whatever you said, Josh,
have a good time.
Have a good time. Yeah. That's it's usually some different kind of gas stations, but yeah,
depends what kind of good time you're trying to have, I guess.
Yeah,
I remember, not like Vegas good time, more like Scranton good time.
I remember like traveling with my dad a lot as a kid, and we would go to truck stops. And I think like as far as I remember, my favorite truck stop, it was always like the Petro. I think like that's just like a solid stop and
good stop.
Get in, get out. You mentioned the bathroom situation, multiple bathrooms. That's like a key. Whereas
that is,
like,
yeah.
A couple of different spots that are dedicated bathrooms, solid restaurant, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Love's is great because they do the full stall door to the ground. Like you have you're in a ceramic tile box all to yourself if you need to use the restroom there, which is, you know, pretty rare in any American bathroom, public bathroom. True. So a door that goes all the way to the floor, pretty great. Now, I think we all know why they actually built them that way, and that's disgusting. But they're cleaned pretty often. So, you know, a little privacy. I've had to change in many a bathroom, on the way to shows. Like you hurry out of the hotel in the morning and then, you know, you're running late for sound check and you know, you're not going to have anywhere to change at the venue. So you got to run into a gas station and get gas, use the bathroom, put on show clothes, get back out to the car. And
center yourself. You know,
it's nice
to become the artist again.
Yeah, it's nice to have your own little changing room. Loves, if you're listening, I could use a gas card.
Right. Well, I think probably any place that advertises like CB products in the bathroom is a good deal, because you know, I mean, those truckers, they actually have to travel, you know, so. They're looking for bathrooms and they're looking for some privacy and they're looking to maybe change some clothes and all that stuff.
Yeah. The CB stuff, man.
That's true.
So
my dad was
go ahead.
My dad was a long haul trucker for a long time. And he always told me, if you're looking for somewhere to stop, just look for the place with the most trucks. And a lot of times that's Love's or those one weird, you know, like Nathan said, the 4-8 Shamrock Chicago 69, whatever, you know, 8-400.
Klein's Corners and stuff.
Yeah, 400-acre megaplex or whatever. Those places are always awesome, where you stop.
With the CB and shop, like, and there's a Native American trading post, and all the different.
And there's stuff. Like a whole you know, semi-rig like showroom where you can look at every chromed part you could ever get on a semi. Those are sweet.
This episode of New Slang is brought to you by the Blue Light Live here in Lubbock, Texas. Blue Light has undoubtedly been my home away from home over the years and has played such a vital role, not only for my development as a journalist, but obviously it's been one of the foundational pieces for a lot of your favorite songwriters and bands who have made it out of the Lubbock area over the years. And of course, as a music venue, they've played such a pivotal role for a lot of your favorite bands just in general. One of my favorite parts about Blue Light is just how versatile the place can truly be. I've seen it crowded and rowdy on a Saturday night for a rock and roll band, and I've seen it dead still on a Wednesday when a legendary singer-songwriter rolls through town. What you should do is go over to bluelightlubbock.com and check out all the new merch they've added. Hats, t-shirts, both short and long sleeve. They also have hoodies and koozies, and just added some sweatshirts that are very much an homage to the college sweatshirt that John Belushi wore in Animal House. And then of course, maybe the crown jewel of their new merch is the Varsity Club style jacket in blue satin. I got one the other day, and yeah, it's just one of my favorite things I own now. And yeah, I don't know, I just love it. Anyway, you can check out all of their new merch over at bluelightlubbock.com. As always, I'll throw a link into the show notes for easy access. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, like my dad, he... So we owned a trailer company down in Fort Stockton. So he'd haul trailers to places or have to go pick up metal. And so he had his license. And so, yeah, like I'd hop in the truck with him sometimes. And it would, I don't know, like I have this memory right now that just popped back in. And that is, have you ever had that moment where when you're a kid and you think you see that person that you know, and then you go up to them and it's not that person?
Yeah. Yeah. Terrifying.
That happened at a truck stop one time with my dad. I was probably like 10 years old, guy over there looking at like chrome, as you said, I go up and like do that thing that you think like, as a like 30-year-old guy now, I'm like, oh man, that's absolutely sucked. But I just like ran up there and like just smacked the shit out of him. You know, and then like he turned around and it wasn't my dad. And I was like, oh, you're not my dad. I'm so sorry. Like 9-year-old me. And then like looked down the aisle and saw he was like a little bit further down. And then,
Did he happen to see you do that?
No, he didn't. Okay. Like it was far enough down where he didn't see me do that. But it was still
that'd
like
be pretty funny. He's just cracking up at the end of the aisle.
That's pretty good. It is weird now that you're an adult and sometimes something like that'll happen. And it's so, even as an adult, it's equally scary. You're like, what, who are you?
Why it's like your child? Reality altered briefly, you know?
Yeah. Well, hey dad. And you're like, nah.
Especially now with like the mask thing. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. It's real hard.
I was at a liquor store that one of my buddies works at here in town, and I hadn't seen him in like 4 or 5 months, and we're both in there, and I think I see him, but I'm also like, I'm not sure if that's him. There's a bunch of people in there. I have my mask on. He has his mask on. And it was one of those like,
yeah,
Thomas. Right. Hey, okay. Yeah. Okay. We know each other. All right. Yeah. I didn't recognize you with, you know, seeing this much of your face and everything.
Right. So. There's been several moments throughout this whole pandemic where like, yeah, I feel like it does happen at the liquor store a lot, maybe just cause that's one of the few places you sort of go and spend a minute or two, but, where you just stare for a minute and you're like, if it doesn't turn out to be them, it's already weird enough. Cause I've stared at them for far longer than I should be, but you know, you can't tell always. I also never realized how much I read lips. I always thought I couldn't read lips, but now I can't understand anything anybody's saying.
That's what I was going to say. That's been the hardest thing. It's like, I guess my whole life, I was just watching people's mouths move because I can't hear anything.
And putting two and two together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real weird.
Well, you have to do that if you're in a bar all the time too, because
right. Yeah. True.
Like bar conversations are, and it's not just bar, but it's like, obviously because it's loud, but drunk people too. So
yeah,
you guys probably get a lot more than I ever do, but I still am like,
Get about 60% of it, and you sort of just put the rest of it together.
Yeah, you have to like make up the rest of the story.
And that'll happen a lot. And yeah. Josh and I will walk away and be like, did he just say what I think he did? I'm like, well, maybe, you know? Yeah, I think he did.
One of my favorite little, out of all of this has been when you go to like a grocery store or something like that. I know this happened to me the other day at Walmart. I was going to just the pharmacy. And of course, it's one of those things where you wear a mask in and they ask you if you want a mask, if you don't have a mask. But then you walk in and there's like a bunch of people who don't wear masks. And naturally, so it's like, yeah. Oh, okay, well, that's a suggestion, I guess. right. But as I was walking out, I couldn't walk through like the usual entrance, I guess. They had that like kind of blocked off. So you had to like walk through where like the registers are. And I thought since I didn't have anything other than like the stuff from the pharmacy, I could just walk back through. And they were like, sir, you're going to have to go around. I'm like, oh, there's rules about like this that is like meaningless.
Right.
But the mask thing is just,
how you use the exit. Right.
Yeah.
So luckily in Dallas, I haven't seen anyone without a mask on inside a place in a minute that I can think of. Well, of course, you know, like if someone's sitting down to eat or whatever,
right,
they have it off. But, you know, like popping into a gas station or trying to get groceries or whatever, it's been a while since I've seen anyone test it, which is nice. But also Dallas County is like, you know.
It kind of makes sense, right?
It's also just like it's really bad here, so you know, yeah. Everyone's on guard,
scared. I had a really like random and sobering conversation at the grocery store the other day. It was like 10:30 and they closed at 11. I just popped in, we needed coffee and stuff, and so they were watching the registers, you know, like the manager or whatever, just making sure. I guess that's when the people come in to try and steal stuff, is when they're like on some graveyard shift about to close down. And I don't know how. Oh, the lady, I had like a, we were given early on in the pandemic by my in-laws, A&M masks that say BTHO COVID-19. I guess A&M really jumped on that bandwagon pretty quick, but, and she was like, oh, what's that mean? So we talked about it. And she's like, my dad died of COVID, over Christmas. I'm like, oh boy. And she's like, yeah, there's like a couple dudes that come in and make a point of not wearing a mask in the grocery store. And like, it's not my right. And you know, it's a medical condition. You can't ask me about it. And you can't ask me to wear a mask. And then, she said that the guy, who's always like the main one who does it, came in recently wearing a mask, and he's with his girlfriend. And she's like, oh, it's nice to see you wearing a mask. And he's like, yeah, one of my neighbors died from it, so I guess I believe now. And it's like, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's weird how like people have only gotten empathy about this thing or sympathy if it's like directly influenced or directly hit them in a way. Yeah,
right.
Affected them. And I find that incredibly
sad.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
It's had me bummed out the whole... That's been my biggest issue this whole time, is just kind of disbelief at how little everyone cares about each other. And, like, you know, people like to say they'd run into a burning building and all, you know, like, you know, everyone thinks they're like a hero. And it's like, literally, cover your face and then hundreds of thousands of people won't die. That's it. And, right. You know, we just, no one will... I mean, it's not that simple, but you know, you get the general.
I don't know. Courtney just sent me recently some recent numbers on like preventability and stuff. And it kind of is that simple. Is like wearing a mask reduces the risk just so significantly when both people, you know, like if two people are interacting and both are wearing a mask,
it's like a minimum of 70% or something. If both people are wearing a mask properly, right?
Even if they have it, you know, it's crazy.
So, you know, that's been very, I feel like that's kind of been the darkest part of the whole thing, is just watching, I don't know if a whole country can be, have like suffered from sociopathy, but it's like, it seems like it borders that. It's just so ingrained. I guess we're just taught like to be independent and to fight for your right for whatever. It's like, so, you know, at some point someone should have instilled the whole, like, do that unless you're hurting people.
Right.
Part, like, they, that caveat was kind of cut out somewhere.
Well, still, you'd think like the rugged individualistic nature of being an American or whatever would extend to protecting yourself from a virus, but no, it's like, well, if I want to die, it's my right to. I don't know. It's a weird disconnect that we've been dealing with for now almost a year. Or Josh, is you froze up a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, I wasn't saying anything. I just said a year.
Yeah. Well, it's like that disconnect is, I think it's something where the country is, very much that way, but like, I don't know if it's just because we're in Texas and there's like that Texas
that could be
individual thing, spirit as well, as far as don't mess with Texas. If they had thrown that on, maybe we would have, but I don't know. Yeah, it's that, it's the, I wonder how much though, if someone was just stern from the get go or like had presented it in that, like, what I thought was, would have been actually a pretty good campaign had been back in like World War II. They did like the above, like the mirrors. Like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like only like this person can save like an American life or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was about like basically telling secrets, 'cause you didn't know who was like a German spy or something like that.
Loose lips sink ships.
There you go. Yeah. Loose lips sink ships. And I think like it's clearly like it was pointing at you, at yourself. And so had there been something like that, I feel like that may have been a great way to frame it, because I mean,
there definitely wasn't enough. There wasn't we didn't even have a plan in place to get like the infrastructure right. So there definitely wasn't a good branding team on top of the pandemic, but you definitely could have gotten these people who feel like they have a right to do whatever they want to feel empowered by helping each other if it had been presented in the right way. You know, don't mess with Texas, or COVID can't mess with Texas if we band together, whatever, you know, like if you had just like wrapped it up and put a bow on it,
we could turn back time,
you know, people
get Joshua Ray Walker on there singing, don't let COVID mess with Texas. And,
you know, it, I mean, you're right, but unfortunately to have that in place, we would have had probably had to have a bunch of other stuff in place. Like, all the things that scientists told us to have, because there was going to be a virus like this and we didn't plan for it for a decade.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. What I find so weird about it too is you always think like, I guess like with, if you're dealing with like the Hell's Angels, what is it? Like they're like a 2 percenter, right? So like they're
1%
or a 1 percenter. There you go. Yeah. 2% is like the, is the, Wall Street thing. Yeah. 1 percenter though. Yeah. Like that's where, like, that's the genuine outlaw. That's the person you can't wrangle in, right? In society, the outsider. And yet like this, like non-wearing mask stuff, like people are like acting like that's what makes them an outlaw.
Right.
For sure.
But I don't know.
Yeah. Weekend warrior to the max. It's like, yeah. And I get it. Like I don't know, if I went out to a roadhouse in the middle of nowhere and there was a bunch of bikers and they weren't wearing masks, I'd be like, yep, I guess I don't go to that bar. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, not today. I would usually like to go there, but, it is weird. Like you can't make me wear my mask. I want soy in my latte. It's like, what are you like? I can't wrap my head around it. I don't really know what they're trying to prove. It's very strange.
Well, if anything, or if this last year has proven anything, it's that that mentality is going to continue too. So now it's just sort of a matter of, you know, I don't know, I guess we've gone through the stages of grief with it where it's like, well, okay, these people exist and we got to figure out how to respond to it. Now it's just like, well, I guess those people just exist. And now it's about how we live our lives versus how they live theirs or whatever, you know. But you've had it, right, Tom? You got it. You're like unlucky enough to get it pretty early on.
Yeah, I had it back like almost a year ago now, which is
crazy.
It's crazy to even say that now.
Yeah. Glad also, you're all like, right, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. It was I hate to frame it this way, but like I had it so early on, like they still didn't know like what was gonna happen, kind of thing.
Right, right.
So, no, like, I mean I think
it's still sort of a question. Yeah,
I had like so much anxiety and like just wrapped around it too. And it was also, I had it so early that they wouldn't test me because I hadn't been out of the country yet. And like tests were so rare
right.
that it was like, oh fuck, what if this is actually not it? And like, I'm just dying now because of like the common cold or something. But thankfully, like I did get a test and after the fact, and after like, I guess like the worst of it had happened to me, which I didn't have any breathing problems or feel like I needed
to go to
hospital or anything like that. But I will say like the worst part of all of that, and I've talked with a few other friends who have had it, and that is the fatigue that happens after.
Right.
I was fucking tired like the entire time and for like 2 weeks after, just kind of drained and just not myself.
That sounds awful and hard to deal with, especially once you're like over it, but you have to go back to normal life and like doing things, but then you've got these lingering effects. I've got one of my good friends got it, unfortunately, and she had I don't know that she had breathing problems or like, obviously she didn't go to the hospital or anything, but she was pretty sick. And then, but she's a counselor. So, you know, that's a pretty like high, you know, there's a lot of emotions involved and had to go like start taking clients back because her clients need her, you know, as much as she needs like the job, and trying to deal with the after effects of COVID. I was just like, I don't know. I really felt for her and, you know, and again, then the guy walks into the grocery store without a mask and you're like, man, you know, like, come on.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't kill you or send you to the hospital, like there's meaningful reasons to try and suppress it, you know?
Yeah. I think that, I've talked to a couple of buddies about this too. One of my buddies here in Lubbock, he actually, has his like doctorate in public health and he's like a professor here. And we've talked about how, you know, obviously, clearly this is going to be a, like kids who are like young during this time are going to be affected by this immensely.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
But I think also like a little part of me, when you would walk into a store and see someone not wearing a mask, I think this feeling has kind of faded away because of just how many people you see not doing it. And it kind of just, you get used to it, I guess. But early on, especially when I would see people on Facebook or on Instagram or Twitter talk about it, when they were kind of like just saying it was the common cold or like, you know, the government made it, like the Chinese made it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
These conspiracy theories, I would just like, it kind of like just is like these little like I don't want to like frame it as depression, but I want to like kind of like have it as that it's attached to that. Like it was kind of like defeating, like all these little
right
rocks piled on. You're like, oh, well these people like that, you know, or kind of know, like, don't think that like what you had was real or like right. as bad as you thought it was. And yeah, like that's,
I can only imagine
as Josh said earlier, like it's just sad. Like that's the part like I felt more than anything else. I was like, oh, this is a bummer.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be scrolling through like a feed or whatever and you'll see a friend and they'll make a post and you just, this like weight of disappointment sort of settles on you. Like, oh, like, you know, you've bought into this whole thing. And I'm sure it's only compounded when it has I mean, Josh and I have been lucky enough to, I guess, avoid it somehow this whole time, and I'll knock on wood.
Me too.
But
it's like, Nathan and I kind of agreed pretty early on in COVID, once we realized that it was a real issue that was going to be around and whatever, because there was so much false information spread about it in the first few weeks, like in the end of February, early March, where we're kind of like, do we care about it? Is it N1H1? Is it the swine flu? You know, like what, you know, it was hard to put your finger on it at first because like so little was known, and then it became clear pretty quickly. And Nathan and I and Courtney and kind of our whole little music making bubble, kind of without even talking about it, all formed very similar kind of guidelines we were going to, you know, approach this with. So like we've been able to stay productive and see each other occasionally and, you know, sitting around in a backyard or,
yeah, that's helped
whatever. So like,
I do feel bad for the folks like further up north. I mean, even y'all, or like as close as Oklahoma, who get much colder weather for much longer stretches of time. Because we got, you know, backyard weather for a fairly decent amount of time and could like, you know, see friends. We were very obviously, like he's saying, selective about it, but there was a way for us to all sit, you know, far away from each other, but actually see somebody in person. But can you imagine living in North Dakota where you haven't been able to go outside without, you know, freezing to death for 6 months now or whatever?
No way. I couldn't do it.
This episode is brought to you by Wild Gallery. Based in Austin, Texas, Wild Gallery is Austin's only art gallery featuring Native American art. Head on over to wyld.gallery to see their vast array of traditional and contemporary art by Native American artists. Currently, they are a virtual gallery. You can still make appointments on their website if you're wanting to purchase a specific painting in person. But of course, the beauty of them being virtual is that you're able to see and buy from your home without trekking all the way to Austin. While New Slang definitely focuses on music, I always love speaking with songwriters about those other mediums that they explore. Often, that's through painting and drawing, the visual arts. And since I'm a West Texas native, I've long been drawn to the history, the stories, traditions, and heritage of Native Americans, especially those that were out here in the Western frontier. And that is what's so great about Wild Gallery. All of the artists featured are Native American, and they are telling stories about Native Americans. If you scroll through their collection, you'll see a wide range of styles as well. There's definitely some American West and some bold pop art. There's more of that traditional fine art like oil on canvas, as well as those that are influenced by Native American traditions. My parents, they always had paintings hanging around the house or their offices that were inspired by West Texas and Native Americans. And now I do as well, especially here in my office, which I'll let you guess where the latest print is from. As a journalist, I do feel like the most intimidating part is staring at a blank white page. And of course, you don't have to be a journalist to be staring at a white blank page. I know a lot of y'all do that. What I'm saying though is don't let your walls suffer from that same white blandness. Go visit Wild Gallery. I guarantee you, you will find something that moves you and that you'll want hanging in your home. Again, that's Wild with a Y. Go visit wyld.gallery. Links will be in the show notes as well. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I think that's also something that I realized that, like, I'm pretty much a wallflower. I can be by myself and be fine with books and music and just talking with people on the internet kind of thing, social media. But I realized so many of my friends were like, just they're people. And right, they kind of like feed off that in-person interaction, even if it is a stranger. Like they kind of need that interaction where I'm kind of like just okay, just talking with people in a even like a setting like this, you know.
Right.
And they just needed that interaction, that feedback in person. And that's been such a, trying to like, I guess, understand the mental effects on those kind of folks as well.
Yeah, for sure. I've worried about that. There's a few friends that I try and reach out to, you know, periodically, just because I know that they're more that way and also isolated at the moment. So
same. And, you know, in a lot of ways, going into the pandemic, I was and felt like I was one of those people. I mean, it, bank account and schedule willing, I'm at a bar 6 nights a week, you know, meeting people, hanging out, dancing, listening to music, whatever. Like I love going out. I love meeting new people. I love live music. I love drinking at a bar. You know, I thrive on social interaction, especially like new interaction. Like I love seeing my friends, but I also love meeting new people. That's like one of my favorite parts of being on the road. So for me, when this first started, I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? And, you know, maybe I just got lucky or whatever, but I feel like when you put it all into perspective, it's pretty easy to just stay home.
Yeah.
And so I've had a hard time sympathizing with people who are like, man, I just got to get out. I got to, you know, whatever. It's like, do you? Cause like, I'm all for a good time all the time. Like it's hard to get me to go home if there isn't a really good reason to go there. So I've had a hard time sympathizing, except for with people who like live alone and are, you know, actually isolated. That would be very, very hard. And I'm sympathetic for those people, but otherwise it's just kind of like,
well, yeah. I will say our producer, just both for Turks and for Josh, John Pedigo, I think is very much a sort of people person. Not to speak for him, but he's also a guy that sort of thrives out there talking to people and, you know, shooting the shit. There's your cuss word. Sorry, Grandma. But he's also taking this all very seriously. And we had a chance at one point, actually it was Josh, your dad's wake and also your birthday celebration combined.
What a combo.
Yes. We found a place, or Josh found a place. It's this local place around here, Intrinsic Barbecue, really great barbecue. Everybody go up in Garland, and they've got this outdoor space that we were able to all kind of congregate. I remember Pedigo, I talked to him the next day. He's like, I didn't realize like how much I missed it. That like refilled my soul or something. And he like just had this like skip in his step the next day because he was able to be around people. And I mean, I think, I don't know, I sort of am that way myself. But yeah, like you say, it's also easy to choose health and safety of others. But I really look forward to the day. Like we can go to a show again. Oh, would be nice. You know, all the things.
Yeah. Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, nothing. Just that birthday wake combo. The twofer, as they say.
What a twofer.
I think we had like 18 people on like a,
there was 80, music. He had an
80 cap patio. And like one of the guys on State Fair Records, Paul Slavens, does this great song generator thing. And I had a margarita machine. I was just like, I want all my favorite things. My dad had just died. He died like 6 days before my birthday. And I was turning 30 during a pandemic living in a hotel. It was literally like,
it's okay, baby. Oh, no.
The worst, you know, thing like getting moved out of your house, having your dad die, living in a hotel, turning 30, pandemic. It was like the worst just sandwich of things all in 1 week. And I was like, I can't do it. I got to see people. So that was my selfish moment of the pandemic. But I will say we were able to keep it, you know, as safe as possible. Everybody masked. There was one guy playing music. We had pre-packaged barbecue and a margarita machine that had sanitizer everywhere. And it was so much work to make it like as safe as it was. And still coming out of it, I was like, I don't know if I needed to do that. Like, I, you know, probably could have.
It was,
but I was
about as great as it could
be. The highlight of my, if your dad's funeral can be the highlight of the pandemic, that kind of sheds a light on just how much I miss people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, where were we headed?
I don't know about that.
This episode of New Slang is brought to you by Hot Damn Coffee. Rolling in from the hills of eastern Tennessee is Hot Damn Coffee. It's a down-home company that roasts single-origin, high-quality coffees from around the world. Their year-round roasts come from certified farms in Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Nicaragua. Check out the Hot Damn website over at hotdamn.coffee. There you can find more info on their operation and roasting process and some helpful tips on how to brew the best cup of coffee. They've certainly made my mornings that much better. And to be perfectly honest, I enjoy a nice cup of coffee at all hours of the day. Some of my favorites have been the Tanzanian pea berry in medium roast and the medium roast of Nicaraguan with the honey process. While there, check out their Hot Damn Coffee Club, which is a monthly subscription service. With the holiday season coming upon us, it's just really kind of the perfect gift. I don't care how difficult or easy a person is to shop for, they'll always be good with items like high quality coffee. And of course, right now, if you throw in the promo code SLANG in all caps, that's SLANG, you'll get 20% off your order. And if you're signing up for the coffee club subscription service, they'll take 20% off that first month and also throw in a bonus 8-ounce bag of their Nicaraguan coffee. Again, that's SLANG in all caps. Head over to hotdamn.coffee and sign up today. All right, let's get back to the episode.
What is it like, obviously, pushing records during this time? How has that changed? Because Josh, you released that solo record like right as all this is started up, and y'all are releasing this Ottoman Turks record, hopefully as it's kind of winding down.
Right.
Fingers crossed, knock on wood.
Yeah.
What's it been like to, you know, have to kind of push records in ways that are not connected to playing live shows?
Tough.
Hard.
To sum it up. Yeah. The thing I like about it, if there's a silver lining, is that it forces you to get creative about the whole thing. And so you have to come up with, you know, I don't know. Turks has always been a band. I mean, partially just cause you know, Josh is on the road all the time and in a normal year, we've always had to find creative ways to like, you know, rep ourselves and just playing good, like really good specific shows and stuff like that. And so we've tried to roll with the punches in the same way in regards to all this. And there's opportunities to, yeah, I don't know, just try and find new ways to make what you do matter to people. But yeah, Josh also has many thoughts, I'm sure. Josh is good at doubling down and getting creative too.
I love coming up with interesting ways to promote stuff. Maybe in another life, you know, I'll get to promote other people's music or, you know, create small companies or something. I don't know. But it's been really hard. The first couple months of the pandemic, as Nathan knows as well, was all just planning and replanning. Cause like the rules kept changing and
what we
knew about the virus kept changing. Just everything kept changing. Everything was liquid. And I wish I had just had the foresight, which there was no way to say, okay, the next 3 months are a wash, just work on other stuff, write or do something. Cause I spent just, I think it never happened. But you know, I tried to focus more on social media, which is not something I'm terribly good at. We made a lot more video content in the last year, which was, you know, very necessary.
And also something that we have always wanted to do. And I guess this sort of forced us to do that.
Right.
But,
and there's more stuff coming out now. Like, we just put out a video today for our new single Wound Up. And I got a video coming out for a cool cover song that I did with my band here in about a month. And then Turks has even more videos coming out. I mean, what 2020 did was just kind of give us a ton of time to make a lot of stuff. And in a lot of ways, 2021 is kind of going to be like, you know, the time to actually show off what we had time to make, which is great. I looked at my calendar the other day and there's like something fun and exciting coming out to talk about like every month through like the end of the fall, which is really awesome. But with all that time being put into making stuff, you don't really make any money. That is
the one thing.
Very hard. Like, not making money and then also making things that cost money to make was extra stressful. And, you know,
Turks has always managed to maintain a band account where, like, we pay in a portion of whatever we earn from shows, and usually that'll cover whatever costs we come up with. That, you know, we try and make the label or have the label just pay for like the records, and then everything else we cover for many reasons, but partially because we don't want to owe anybody. We've liquidated that account basically in this past year, just trying to make things, and now we're down to paying out of pocket, which is, I don't know. And then a motivation to keep things cheap and lean and all that, but still it's
especially with Ottoman Turks, we've really had to, like, you know, figure out what we can do on a shoestring budget, because it is coming out of our pocket and our pockets are also empty. So,
right.
But we've made some just really cool stuff. Like, I'm really proud of the 35 to Life video.
Yeah.
No one would believe like what we were able to make that for. Same with the video that came out today. I mean,
I was going to say Wound Up. Yeah. That wedding dress I'm proud of finding at a thrift store. It was $40.
I was going to say, I think we're all in maybe $250
for 200 something. Yeah.
For the video that came out today. And I would, you know, I'm proud of that. Making something cool is awesome.
A lot of that is due to John Pettigo, actually, our producer, also directed the video. And a lot of that's due to him. Yeah.
So, a lot of that is because he agreed to edit the video and direct it without making any money. But, you know, that's been one of the other silver linings of this whole thing. It's like everyone's kind of in the same boat. If things aren't going well in your career, you know, you can get frustrated or whatever, but this year everything was going wrong in everyone's career. So, I felt like people kind of banded together in a way, and like, you know, a lot of people were doing each other favors. You know, it's like, I know everyone knows that the other person doesn't have money. So it kind of got stripped back down to this DIY thing where it's like, okay, we all just want to make something because we're all cooped up. And I feel like a lot of stuff got done this year in that way, where, you know, someone says, hey, I'm doing this, do you want to do it? And you're just like, yeah, sure, I'll help. And, you know, there's probably no money in it, but what else do you have to do? Because there's a pandemic, so.
And we literally are all in it together. So, you know, whatever industry you're in, you know, I think there is sort of a brotherhood that you feel trying to survive as best you can.
Those, I was going to bring up the music videos because they remind me of like when music videos were on TV, you know, clearly, there's actually like a narrative within them, a storyline. And they felt really all practical. You know what I mean? Like, obviously you guys didn't bring in Michael Bay or like James That's Cameron to one. Like do like special effects. But like, yeah, it was all like to me, it looked like all practical effect kind of stuff, right. Especially on that 35 to life. So where did like those ideas come from as far as like, okay, yeah, let's make a music video, but it has to be clearly like the length of the song. What can we do in that mix?
I will say that I think our ideas definitely reached far beyond the length of the song and our budget and our talent and all of that. But Josh came up, I think, with the idea of doing the slasher video for 35 to Life based on the, you know, lyrical contents of the song, which are literally about JFK coming to life and taking over Dallas sort of in retribution for his assassination. But, you know, light, airy stuff. But then also, Josh, maybe, I don't know if you wanting to make a slasher video coincided with the fact that you also knew a couple special effects artists. But that was like, it was Danny Nguyen and Sidney Peralta were the SFX artists on that. And they're just like some people that Josh knew from sort of around town.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a fascination with horror movies and gore, and like less about the plot in the movie, and like that never got me. It was always the practical effects that I loved, especially in the low budget stuff. And I met Danny, who I think goes by Danny Dahmer when he's doing effects stuff.
Right.
He, you know, I'd seen his work before, and he had done some stuff with friends, and it was actually our director, Jace, that came up with the slasher idea. My original idea for the movie was actually like an undead thing, where like
That's
JFK
right.
is
That's right. yeah.
undead, and there was going to be a Jackie, and you know, the whole thing. And then literally the day after I brought that idea up in the studio, Jace texted Nathan and I and said, "Hey guys, I have a treatment for a slasher video. Are you interested?" And we're like, "Oh yeah, we were just talking about doing a zombie movie. That's basically the same thing." And so he came in from Nashville and rented some gear and a car and came and shot the video. And I finally got to ask Danny to do some special effects, and he brought along his friend Squid, and she was amazing. And the practical effects in the video are just like above and beyond anything I could have hoped for in the budget and the time. And
what was it, 2 days, I think, that we shot that?
And the ignorance that we came into it with, because we don't know how to shoot a music video. So we're like, oh, silicone molds? Should we have like started those already or what? Like,
right.
You know, it's like everything was done out of order and everything took, you know, 10 times longer because we're dumb. And Danny and its Squid were super professional. So, but yeah, what they made was crazy. Like the throat slitting scene with the blood spray, like
one of my favorite parts. Yeah.
Danny made that piece, like custom made that piece to spray like that. And, you don't get to see much of it, but he made a whole fake cranium and like hair and flesh piece and silicone brain matter for my head.
When Josh gets hit
smacked
with the
wrench, pneumatic thing, like exploded the pieces everywhere. We took out a little bit of the gore. Oops, my phone was ringing. We took out a little bit of the gore because it was like, you know, we probably would have had to put up like more warning. Like,
yeah, hey, yeah. There's a viewer discretion is advised, but we wanted, you know,
there was a moment where we were showing it to loved ones and they were like, "This is horrible. Like, don't like, don't put this out in public."
My mom just hated my, like, I had contacts that were provided by Danny and Squid. And, my mom hated that cause it freaked her out. Cause I'd like just turn to look at her and she'd be like, "Ah."
Yeah, there were some really graphic scenes that got narrowed down.
We're going to put out the red band version, you know, whatever, the X-rated version.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah. I wasn't thinking about it while we were making it, but looking back at like some of the shots, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like way gorier than what you'd see in a mainstream horror movie. Like really detailed brain matter and like skull shards and, you know,
R-rated and less PG-13, which I think is what most people are more used to.
And so
even The Ring and all that, right, is like sort of, I don't know.
Right. So like we just had no way of, since we were going to put it on social media, we had no way to like regulate who was going to see it. So we had to tame it down a little bit, but yeah, one day that'd be cool. We should just like put together all the crazy gore.
Right.
The neck slitting scene is so gross. There's like one angle where it actually looks like, have you ever like dressed a deer before?
I have not.
Tom, have you ever had to dress a deer? You know that like fatty layer?
Yeah.
You get through, like if you kill a deer when it's cold out, they get that fat around the neck. Well, like it looked like that. It was like kind of yellow and gelatinous. And like, yeah, I watched it and I was like, whoa, like, that's, that looks too real. So, you know, we couldn't really use that. Because it was very
we were worried enough as it is that nobody would pick it up or like want to show it anywhere, you know.
But right,
it turned out pretty.
We ended up getting a perfect Rolling Stone feature, which was killer. Like I didn't know if it was too weird to get like a mainstream premiere. So that was very.
Well, we constantly worry about that with Turks in general, just because it doesn't really fit into any one thing necessarily. So,
right.
Yeah. Do you guys remember on MTV when they would have like the making of the video of the music video?
Uh-huh.
Or like it feels like every at some point during like the, I don't know, the 80s or 90s, the film crew making the film, but then there was always the film crew recording the film crew.
Right. Yeah.
If there's like that version that you guys can put out like in like 10 years, you know, that's the uncut version of like just the making the scenes, the behind the scenes, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I would love to show the part where Josh is sitting with his head in his hands. Like it's just not gory enough. I asked for more blood.
I did have so much. I had so much corn syrup in my hair.
Oh yeah.
It was disgusting. There's a part where I'm on the ground and they had to kind of pour it all over my hair to make it look real. And I got up and my hair was just this matte, like, it's so gross. It took forever to get out. There's also a gross scene where I'm sitting in a chair getting my makeup applied and like from the front, I'm just eating a corn dog because it had been a long day and we had to microwave a couple. We had to microwave a couple corn dogs for the shoot because there's a corn dog that makes an appearance in the video. And so I was like, well, I might as well eat it. And I'm sitting there in my chair getting my makeup applied. And like, it's me eating a corn dog smiling and you pan back. And I just have this massive head trauma with like brain showing, which is cool. I can't believe how real they made it look. So if you need special effects work,
yeah.
Chase also did a great job directing as well.
The corn syrup. Have you guys heard about that girl who kind of went viral the last couple of weeks because she put Gorilla Glue in her hair because she hairspray and then it like of course is Gorilla Glue so she couldn't wash it out.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was
Hear about that. What does she have to do, shave her head or what?
No, she can't. It's too hard. She like can't get it off, so it's like screwed up her scalp. I don't know where the story's at now, but it's
been
episodic.
Like, yeah, it's weird because I think like some at this point right now, like some LA plastic surgeon's going to help her out.
They got that. Okay.
Like it turned to like a dome basically, I guess. The part that I am kind of amazed by in all of this is that, she got like verified on like Instagram and like Twitter and stuff
if there's a silver lining,
like,
where does she go after this though? She gets it, she's like, I'm that girl who got gorilla glue hair.
Yeah. Which is just the, I don't know. I crack up at like that part that she became verified because
that is really funny
of that fact right there. Yeah. So obviously, Josh, you just said corn syrup.
I can't get it. I'm still not verified.
That's the worst. I was a summer camp counselor. This is going to be like a short little side off here. I was a summer camp counselor and like I think the worst thing I've had poured on me and on my hair has been like,
urine.
Those like big industry size things of like, ketchup and stuff. Okay. So I had ketchup thrown on me and like, I hate ketchup in, any kind of like condiment in bulk basically is like the absolute worst. So Nathan, what's like been the worst thing that you've had thrown on that you've had to wash out of your hair?
I have been, on a drunken lake trip, with some friends. I wasn't just directly peed on, but they sort of did a strafing and some splatter kind of went on. So that is pretty bad. As far as it goes, I don't think I can't say that. Everybody wants something to happen to them. Unwillingly, nobody wants to get peed on. So
that's true. That's how unwillingly works.
I could say it was my fault though, because I was laying down on the deck outside, but you know.
I thought you were sitting under a table.
Yeah, laying down. I was under a table outside on a deck. It was a lake house trip, you know? I mean, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
It was Billy Law, now settled down and with a child, bassist for Ottoman Turks. That was the perpetrator of this crime. Yes.
That's hilarious. I always thought it was Tom.
No, Tom was Tom. Also there.
Other Tom.
Yeah, different Tom. Sorry.
It makes it way better that it's Billy, the bassist of Ottoman Turks, in case the listeners don't know.
This was probably like 10 years ago, but yeah. That same trip, I had some beer. I think maybe it was after that. We're like, oh, I got pee, and then poured some beer in my hair, which actually is really good for your hair. And I had the best like hair week after that. Incredible. And I had to Google it because I'm like, what is going on? And it's a thing. People like mix beer in with their shampoo and stuff because something in it is good for you. But I've never tried it since. I should. Again, that's one of those things you turn to your significant other and like, hey, I'm going to put beer in the shampoo. And they're like, are you though?
what, if you remember, what kind of beer was it?
I mean, it was 100% Natty Light or Keystone. I think that was about all we drank, still drink generally. Miller Lite is where we go if we're fancy now.
I was going to say, you've grown up into adult people who drink Miller Lite.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, oh, my hair has never been nicer after I put in this PBR, you know. Or like,
Well, that's what the hipsters use, but let me tell you, Keystone works just fine.
I could pound some Keystone. I haven't had Keystone in a while.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
it's like Natty, sparkling water now.
You were a Natty Light guy because I feel like that was just because your name, right?
I had to, yeah. That was my original Instagram handle, was Natty Light Official, and I feel like I maybe stole that from them. I'm not sure.
I feel like that was because you had to, because Natty Light's not actually very good.
Never but bothered me, but
Keystone, again. A lot of people hate Keystone, but I feel like Keystone is the most drinkable beer just because of its total lack of flavor.
On that note, I'll be right back.
Just because of its total lack of flavor, I feel like you can go through a lot of Keystone. Speaking of, I have Miller Lite in a cooler like 10 feet from me. It's probably too early to start drinking.
Hey, it's probably cold though, at least, right?
Because it is cold everywhere in my house. So yeah, all the beverages in my house are cold. Look at that. I think you can see my breath. Maybe the wall's too light. Hold on. Let's see. Do you see that? No?
No. I believe you though.
I can see my breath. It's messed up. You shouldn't be able to see your breath indoors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like back then, I was mainly like a PBR or like a High Life guy. Of course, like Lone Star is just kind of my go-to now, even though that's not necessarily even any classier.
I went through a long Lone Star phase because I was just like, High Life. I went through a big High Life phase too. And then I realized that if it's not really cold, it's kind of soapy. And then I went through a Rolling Rock phase. And I realized if that's not cold, it kind of tastes like chocolate, which I think might've been pointed out to me by Nathan.
I don't know.
Is that you? Maybe. One of the guys in the group said it once and I could never get it out of my head. And forever now, Rolling Rock tastes like chocolate. And, I can't drink it anymore. And then I moved on to Lone Star because that's what you do as a young Texan. You drink Lone Star. And then eventually I was like, that has too much flavor. I'm going to drink Miller Lite.
the High Life, I at some point, like when you're, I don't know, like 11, 12 beers in, it starts tasting, I don't know if it's just because you've had so many of them and it's built up in your mouth and on like your palate. But to me, that's when they would start tasting like just absolute shit. And
yeah, they start to skunk and yeah. It's like, I want a beer to do the opposite. I want the first three to be not great. I want the first one to be amazing because it's the first beer. And then the next couple, you're like, I don't really. And then by six, you're like, whatever, I can't taste them. But High Life does the opposite. By the time you get to like 12, you got this like skunky, you know, tongue thing going on. I don't like it.
I got to say, that's why I like coming on this podcast, is because where else can you talk about having 10, 11 beers? That's not going to happen on any old radio station or whatever.
Well, I was going to say. Go ahead.
Just that I heard the other day that everybody lies to their doctor about how much they drink. And I didn't know that. I've been telling my doctor the truth my whole life, and now I feel like they're probably worried about me if everybody else is lying. Like, do you tell your doctor when he's like, how many alcoholic beverages do you have a week? Do you tell him the truth?
Me? Absolutely not. Like, I'm like, you cut it like down in like a quarter or a half or something.
That's literally what I heard, is like every doctor just multiplies it by four.
Oh, that's all right. I'm glad that they handle it.
What I was going to say though is, have you guys had this new Lone Star? That's like this, like, I don't know. It's like a German style, and I got it because I saw it at the store and it had Das Beer on it. So I thought that was kind of funny. And I brought it, I went up to Turkey, Texas a couple weekends back to visit some friends. And so I got it kind of as like this is kind of funny. And then like I had one and I was like, this is not bad. It's a little on the peachy side. I think there's like some peach in it or something like that, but
sounds good to me.
Now is it a craft beer? By no means. I'm not really a craft beer person though. So as far as Lone Star goes though, I thought it's a little bit classier. I don't know. Lone Star, if you want to like sponsor New Slang, that would be great.
Yes, please. That'd be amazing.
I think that's another reason we drank so much Lone Star for a minute, is because they were sponsoring our shows. We were playing a lot at the Double Wide in Dallas, and for a while there, it was the Lone Star stage at the Double Wide. So like every time we'd play, they'd have $2 Lone Star. And I'm pretty sure we hold the record for most Lone Star sold at a show in Dallas.
I mean, when it's $2, you pretty much like have to just drink all of it, right? That's sort of how we went into the whole thing.
They got to the point where they would stock up on Lone Star when we'd play there, because they knew our fans really like to drink, but we're also very poor.
Yes.
And so one night the bartender, Hernandez, came up to me after the show. Was like, you guys did $900 in $2 Lone Star.
And I remember that show too, I think, because that was the 3-set one where we had the whole night.
Yes. And
yeah,
we also sold out of some sort of whiskey that was on sale.
Right. I remember we did glass bottles in the third set. Oh, Josh, I think it's... Oh, yeah, we did glass bottles in the third set. And I just remember on the sing-along part towards the end, listening to the crowd singing along and being like, oh, man, we need to, like, set up a taxi, like, bank for these people because there's no way that they're going to be able to drive home.
We did. Do you not remember? We had to go out in the parking lot and put the correct person in the correct Uber.
Well, yeah, the Uber. Yeah.
All these Ubers showed up and they'd yell out names and all the drunk people were getting confused. So we were out there physically putting our friends and fans in cars. And I think quite a few girlfriends had a rough night that night, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. A couple of the long-term friends of the band didn't do too well.
All part of the fun.
I think that's the show where I tripped getting off stage and almost murdered a few middle-aged ladies in the audience. There's like a 3-foot stage and there's this little lip to hide the wires between the monitors. And I was wearing my pointy toed snakeskin vaquero boots. And I went to hop off the stage and my toe of my boot went under the 2x4. And so I pretty much laid out and then somehow got my other foot under me, but all my weight was like in front of me. And so I had to jog it out, but I jogged it out all the way to the back of the venue and like ran into the bathroom door. But there were people there and luckily they all got out of the way in time. But these two middle-aged women who didn't know who we were and just happened to be in there almost got annihilated. Luckily no one was hurt.
We came away from the incident unscathed.
But man, if I had just like spear tackled a couple cougs in the middle of the show, that would have been...
It may have made the paper. I don't know. All press is good press.
There's no way they wouldn't have gone to the doctor and I would have felt terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great night. Don't let Ottoman Turks play for 4 hours. Everyone
we don't
drunk.
We don't do that much anymore.
I always love whenever, like, I guess like Blue Light knows to just always have, they don't sell out. They don't ever run out of Lone Star basically. But, I guess it was a couple years back. My buddy Red Shahan got married and their little, after reception party was at this bar outside of Fort Worth. It's called the Finish Line. And he had told them it's like a little dive bar, like outside of town. Like you can still smoke in there. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this place.
Letting Pantigo.
But it they ran out of Lone Star, even though they told them like, no, order more than you guys
think
you are going to need. Because there's going to be a lot of people from Lubbock coming in and they didn't believe and they ran out. Like, I don't know how many they ordered, but they definitely ran out before the night was done. And yeah,
that's amazing.
That bar is in Aledo, Texas.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Aledo.
We've run one time Ottoman Turks and 40 Acre went on the road together and we ran a bar in, New Braunfels out of, was it New Braunfels?
Yep, New Braunfels.
River Run Ice House or something like
Roadhouse,
that?
Roadhouse, yeah.
Roadhouse. We drank them out of Miller Lite because this was after Ottoman Turks had converted to Miller Lite and everyone in 40 Acre drinks Miller Lite. And we were competing to see who could have a bigger bar tab because the tabs were comped.
I have proof. We won. I kept them, so.
And because of that, we ran out of Miller Lite, like, kind of early-ish, I feel like, and we had to all pivot to other drinks, so we're all, you know, like, trying to still, like, beat each other at drinking, but, you know, having to drink Bud Light Limes or whatever. And that was fun. But, yeah, it's easy to drink a bar out of one thing if you bring more than
if you try hard enough. Yeah. We were playing with Mickey and the Motor Cars too, and I'm not sure how much they appreciated us, like, I don't know, running a drinking contest on the side. Yeah. But
yeah,
that's true. I totally forgot that Mickey and the Motor Cars was headlining that.
Yeah. We were just lucky to be there, and then we decided to go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, that was less yeah. cool.
Has it happened where, like, you've played a place, they said, okay, yeah, you have the, like, a free tab. Then, like, the next time you guys come through, they're like, you have X amount only and not, like, you have a limit. Is that happened before?
100%. I don't know if it's ever been our fault necessarily. They always blame it on somebody else, but
I think that that's happened pretty much every place Ottoman Turks has ever played, but somehow we're never really blamed for it.
Right.
But it does.
Somebody else must come in after and do, like, a worse job of, you know.
Yeah. Or they're just nice and don't tell us. I don't know.
Maybe.
There was one place when I went to Norway in 2019, my first, well, only tour over there. I would have had three by now, but they keep getting canceled.
Rescheduled.
Yes, rescheduled. I was playing a border town in Norway called Halden, and it's hard to explain. It's like, I guess, a border town here. Everyone's just a little bit more rough around the edges. Everyone in Norway is super nice, and no one commits crimes, and it's very weird and, like, safe there. But in this one town, it was, like, the only place anyone, like, offered me drugs, you know? And I was playing this tiny bar, which is famous in Norway for having singer-songwriters. Like, they had Townes Van Zandt, his last trip to Europe. And, that's cool. You know, they've had, like, a bunch of famous Texas country guys come through. And so the guy says, yeah, unlimited tab, you know, whatever. And me and my tour manager, who's, like, this 6'8" Swedish guy named Daniel Josefsson, we get there really early because it was a short drive. We set up and we sound check and we start drinking till, like, dinner time. And then we go get dinner, go back to the hotel, take a nap, come back, keep drinking. But at no point during the night did we think we were, like, raging. You know, we were just having a nice casual drink. And we stay late after the show and meet with fans till the bar closes at 3, and we walk back to our hotel. And the next day we get on the road, and the owner calls us and asks how many people were in the band. and Daniel's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you guys drank twice your pay. And he was like, no, we didn't. We just drank beers. And he was like, no, you did. Like, you must have been buying drinks for other people. And so he went down the list and was like, no, that was what we were ordering.
I remember that round.
That's definitely what we were ordering. We just drank for, like, 12 hours.
Funny.
And anyway, he was upset at first, and then he was impressed. So they ended up framing that receipt, and it's on the wall in this bar in Norway.
That's amazing.
And I want to say it was, like, 400 American or something. But over there, the beer is all, like, you just order beer and you get whatever beer is made in that town, and that is beer in whatever town you're in. So they're pretty cheap, you know, like, they're like $2 or $3 here. So somehow I think Daniel drank, like, 70 pints, which is not that uncommon. I saw him do it other times on the trip because he's so damn big that he finishes a pint in, like, 3 drinks. So he goes back to the bar, like, every 5 minutes. And if you give him cans, he just leaves the bar with, like, 4 cans at a time. And they look like those little V8 cans in his hands.
Giant style.
Yeah.
Shaking his hand the first time, it just sort of just enveloped mine. Yeah. It's crazy.
But anyway, that's my favorite, like, overdone bar tab story. And I guess we drank, like, over 100 beers, and I had, like, 20 something whiskeys or something. That was just a Tuesday. I don't know. I know there were nights we drank way more than that for sure on that tour.
I am always curious about like other cultures' drinking habits. Like I know Koreans drink a ton. They've got sort of like a American Texan mindset on it. Like, you know, if you're having dinner, you just drink. But I'm not clear on how that is everywhere. You know, it is something that we sort of take for granted, I think, at least here in Texas, maybe.
Yeah, there's definitely like, at least in on that Scandinavian tour, each country I went to had their own thing. Like, seemed like in Sweden and Norway, you could drink pretty much all you wanted as long as it was after dark, but not liquor. But if it was a weekday, not liquor. That's crazy. Liquor's for weekends. And like, if you drink, if you drink liquor while the sun's up on a weekday, you're in trouble. Like I would seriously get weird looks for ordering like a bullet neat at lunch, there, which I thought was strange. Cause then on the weekends they like rage and everyone's wasted. They have a day, I forget which day of the week it is. It might be Wednesday. And I can't say the word in Norwegian, but it basically just translates to Little Saturday. Like they actually just call that day of the week Little Saturday, and they all go out and get drunk halfway through the week. I'm like, that's great.
I like that.
That should be a thing here.
I am adopting that.
You guys want to go out tonight? It's a Little Saturday.
It should be like a rolling or like a random thing. It's just a certain day of the week. You never know which one, but you're like, I'm calling a Little Saturday today and everybody has to do it.
Or maybe you have like one a month. You're like, oh, today's Little Saturday.
I like the one like, a week. I like, why restrict yourself? Why?
I guess in my mind, it's like that Little Saturday, everyone just gets off work. It's just an extra weekend day spread out.
It's a good idea. Every month. It's a great idea.
That'll be my like platform.
If I ever run for office, which I'm not, but if I did, like it would be like my two big things are practical. And that is like the daylight saving stuff. Like, let's just nix that. Right. Let's keep like the summertime hours, whatever that is. And then two,
more light.
Yeah,
man. Light. And I feel like people would be all about this, and that would be adopting. I don't know if anyone's even came up with like an actual plan of this, but like an 8-day week where like every weekend was a 3-day weekend.
That should be a thing. I mean,
I think that would be,
because Friday is not a weekend.
Yeah.
And Sunday is barely a weekend, right? You really only get one day.
Yeah. And I'd never known the name of it, but I think Little Saturday would be like the perfect of it.
Right. Yes. It's like, it's Friday. It's Little Saturday. It's Saturday. It's Sunday. It's Sunday.
That's exactly. Perfect.
God, yeah. I think we'd all be happier, right?
Yeah.
And you know,
well, hey, I'm voting for you, man.
Everybody in the world could work 20% harder 5 days a week and turn their 5-day work week into a 4-day work week. That's just a fact. Like, there's time in the day. Just don't play on your phone when you go to the bathroom after lunch.
Plus, it's amazing how hard you work when you got motivation. And, you know, like, if you actually feel rested and, like, you actually, like, enjoyed yourself, man, sure, I look forward to the work week after that, right?
You had a nice little Saturday?
Yeah, nice little Saturday. Well, I will say, Tom, you say you're not running for office, but I think if I've learned anything over this past year, and I've learned many things over this past year, it's that really all of us should just be running for office. Because I know a lot of people that are better qualified and certainly more caring about the general population than most of the people that seem to be serving in that regard. So please run, and I will vote if I can.
You guys remember back when they did like the what was it in California when they recalled their governor, and then like that's when Arnold won a little bit right after there.
I didn't know that was a thing, but yeah, okay.
But they elected the governor, and like I guess maybe a year or two in, they're like, this guy fucking sucks. We're gonna like recall him. And so like there's a lot of like paperwork that you had to go through and all that.
Right.
But what I remember was, I guess because of the rules and because it was going to be just like there was no primary and all that, or whatever it is. So like there wasn't like where they dwindled it down to two people. So anyone could be on the list, and you had all these like I'm going to say celebrities in air quotes because they weren't really celebrities, but they were like that 15 minutes of fame people who are running just to try and like make their fame a little bit more.
Right.
And I wonder if like that
kind of like hair girl.
Yeah. Gorilla glue hair girl would have like ran back then. but I wonder how much of that like is the reason why we've got a lot of celebrities who have run for office. I guess it's always been a thing, but I was listening to actually a podcast the other day, last night, about how like Richard Petty had ran for like a Senate or like a governor spot, like in Carolina or Florida, and he just got wiped out. And it's like, man, had he ran like 30 years later, because like Tommy Tuberville is like the senator of Alabama, and he was, you know, a football coach. He coached here in Lubbock at Tech, and absolutely everyone hated him here. But what they were saying was how everyone in the SEC when he was at Auburn was like, all these SEC coaches were like, oh, he's the dumb one. Like, and so like, I think like that says so much about,
right.
about him. He's been like the one who like, they've asked like, what are the three branches of government? And like, kind of not knowing the answer, you know, offense, defense, and special teams, you know, whatever.
That's pretty good.
So
that's yeah, a good answer. If he's trying to be funny, that's a good answer. If he's
no. Like answer, he didn't know what the answers were.
right.
That's
at all, but.
Everyone who runs for a public office needs to pass the same test that we have immigration. People take.
Oh, right.
I endorse because that.
That should just be a clear cut rule. I don't know why it's not.
Well, yeah, like we got that hairdresser lady, not to get super political, but Lord.
Oh yeah. And then the Jewish space lasers. Good God.
Yeah.
Like the fact that the phrase Jewish space lasers could be said on the floor
in 2021.
It's just like, what is happening?
Want to break one more time to talk about our pals over at Desert Door and offer a handful of my favorite go-tos. By no means am I an experienced mixologist or bartender or anything like that, but these have been super easy to make and great ways to unwind in the evening. Let's start off by upping your ranch water game a little bit by subbing Desert Door in. I'm a simple man. I just kind of take a Topo Chico, take a couple of drinks out, add some Desert Door, and top it off with a few lime wedges. I'm actually pretty big on the Palomas now too. What I'll do is take some Desert Door, some grapefruit juice, a dash of agave nectar, and some fresh lime juice. And I'm kind of big on lime, so I'll throw in another wedge or two when I pour it over some ice. And actually, I'll do the exact same thing, but I'll substitute some pineapple for the grapefruit for a change up. And now that the weather is dipping down, I've started having a Desert Door version of a hot toddy. Put some Door and some honey together and give it a mix. Add in an Earl Grey tea bag with some boiling hot water. Let it just sit for a minute. Remember, patience is a virtue. And then of course, I'll squeeze in a little bit of lemon just to have that balance. Anyway, Desert Door, it's as versatile as vodka and more refined, smooth, and complex than tequila. It's rich and balanced, so whatever your go-to is, it'll do the trick. For more info on Desert Door, check the show notes. All right, back to the episode.
Hey, actually, let's tie this to the record because she also did say she believed in 9/11. And like, that's another thing, one of those where it's like, who has to actually claim that now? Like, you shouldn't have to like be someone who says, I believe that 9/11 actually happened. And you guys have that song on the record, this new record, Conspiracy Freak.
Right.
What's y'all's favorite like conspiracy theory that isn't like fucking horrible, like in a mean way?
Back when they were fun? Yeah. Back,
like a fun conspiracy theory. You guys have any?
Boy, it's hard to choose. I think I put all of them in, or a lot of them in that song. I know one. This is sort of, I think it was a joke, but I used to, so that song is partially based on my time spent on some like forums and things, that talk a lot about conspiracies and stuff like that, which I really loved. I mean, I genuinely enjoy like learning about that stuff and thinking about it, even entertaining it for a moment. But, you know, logic is a very easily sort of brings you back to reality. It's just not fun anymore because of the rampant and insane things. But there was one that was posited that the big, what do you call them? Like the big rig things that hold up the electrical lines, you know, the big ones that, that they like clear land for that travel all across the country, basically. Those are actually aliens that they're like life forms. And that's, they link together and they're sort of taking over the planet somehow. And there's different, they've like typologied them somehow where it's like, you know, you've got the ones that are shaped like this that are the masters. And then they're the smaller ones, the smaller electrical poles that are like the servants and things like that. But somebody had written up this elaborate sort of thesis on the fact that these are actually aliens that have come down to give us electricity. But in reality, they're trying to take over the planet. That's a fun one. Now that's a conspiracy I like to read about.
Was it like, so was the government in on it and they're helping install these aliens, or is it like our memories are wiped and they install themselves and we imagine that they're installed?
We can only assume that the government's in on it, perhaps being controlled directly by these creatures, but we don't actually know.
What about the workers that are working on? Do they know? The guys who have to like rig up to the wires and helicopter in, like, are they in on it?
I'm going to have to assume that this conspiracy theory sort of ignores the fact that those have to be installed or built in any sort of way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I also spent a lot of time on those forums growing up. I was on 4chan in junior high and, you know, like,
yes,
looked at creepypasta and all good the stuff. Other things. And so, I mean, I love all of them. I had never thought about it till just now, but I guess DB Cooper made it on my last record, and that in itself is a conspiracy. Yeah.
That's a wellspring of fun, like yeah, rabbit so holes.
I just love the stuff. I love everything from Bigfoot to UFOs to even the weird stuff, like Nathan said, like, you know, power lines being aliens or, yeah. You know, ancient aliens. That's great stuff.
Yeah, I loved all that.
Not just I mean, the show, but even just like, you know, the theories around it. The fact that the pyramids could have been giant batteries. That's a great one. All of it.
You do have to marvel sometimes at some of that stuff, not to show my conspiracy cards too much. But like I get sometimes on Instagram, pages will be suggested to me that show like the ancient like stones that are so perfectly cut. And you're like, how could you, like, we could barely do that with lasers now. And it's just a marvel. I mean, that stuff, whether or not aliens were involved at all, is pretty fascinating to look at and wonder at, you know?
Right. And I guess that's how I got into it, is just like, I guess my grandpa was kind of into it too. Like he really loved researching the Bermuda Triangle. So I got really into the Bermuda Triangle as a kid.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
He showed me like, so he was in the Navy and somehow at a estate sale or something, he had copies of these redacted, like government files that were clearly like Xeroxed, you know, like they're probably public files that just got, you know, printed right at a library or something. But it was about those like seven planes that flew into the Bermuda Triangle, disappeared, and then just reappeared on an airbase like 7 days later or whatever. And the pilots were like never found. And like when you're like a kid, you're like, whoa, you know, that's as close, that's the closest thing to like magic or whatever that you can really get to in the real world. And so yeah. I love that stuff. And, you know, there's an architect on the West Coast that used counter levers and magnets in his architecture and had like, you know, this house that became like a tourist attraction. I wish I could remember his name right now. But, you know, like a toddler could push open like an 8-ton cement door and stuff like that smoothly. And, you know, just like, that's not really a conspiracy theory, but just kind of anything yeah. that messed with reality or physics or whatever really interested me. I guess my song Cupboard also was about time travel, and that's on my record. So I guess this stuff affects my music more than I thought it did. I thought
this, it's not just the Turks thing.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's so fun and lighthearted. And then now to have it affecting the government and politics and the social climate so much, it's like, it's not even fun to, you know, to look into it. 'Cause it's just like, oh God, like no one can tell the difference between what they should and shouldn't believe anymore.
Right. That's the tragedy of it. It's like, there's legitimate things to question about the government constantly. That's the whole point, right? Is that we're supposed to keep them accountable and things, but you gotta, you know, when it comes down to like denying that 9/11 was real or whatever, that's when we've gone too far, probably. It's funny. I was recently looking back through, I think for tax purposes, Turks, our band chat, whatever the group text message thread. And, we were talking about Conspiracy Freak and about the 9/11 line in it. And, we were just talking about how many different conspiracies there are about who did 9/11 and how they don't all really function together. Like there's all these different schools of thought. And I guess that just sort of proves how wild it is. And now there are some of them are, you know, congressmen or whatever, which is crazy to me, but still.
Yeah. The,
yeah.
I guess it was probably like, I don't know. It was actually, I can't think of what year it was. But it was the anniversary of when JFK was shot. I was listening to a podcast about them kind of talking about how that's when like conspiracy theories went mainstream. And yeah, it was all sense. Because of like, before that point, people, I guess, trusted their government. And that was like the first time that the general public overall started questioning, like, you know, who these alphabet agencies are and like,
right.
Would they actually kill a president? And
yeah,
you know, and I think like everything, and I say, when I say trust the government, like I don't, like there's obviously always skeptics of what the government's doing, and the government's always done horrible things to people.
Yeah, but true.
Like for a lot of times, like the average American citizen trusted Eisenhower or like, you know, FDR or
yeah.
people that were presidents, they trusted them and they trusted JFK, and then JFK got shot. And then it's like, think of all the conspiracy. It's the same thing with like, as you mentioned with the 9/11, there's like all these different camps of like who it was. Yeah. And yeah, it's, that's, I guess what they were talking about as far as when conspiracy theory went mainstream. Me, like I grew up obviously watching like X-Files. And right. so like, that's where I think most of my kind of like fandom of conspiracy theories came out of was the, like the monster of the week kind of shit. And then like,
yeah, the what if sort of idea, right?
Yeah. And then like the bigger, like smoking man, alien theory kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That was all like, and it was so weird. And like, I think like what helped make that show so amazing and helped breed the idea of conspiracy theories for me was just how dark that show was as far as like right. the actual lighting, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah,
it was a very dark show. And to tie into what you were saying about, you know, the distrust and how that could have spawned conspiracy theories in the mainstream, there was this huge awakening of just knowledge and technology through that era as well, where people who were born literally with horse and wagon were experiencing space travel and nuclear bombs and, you know,
jet power,
basically science fiction, mm-hmm. in their real life and with no explanation, you know, like there was a decent amount of the U.S. who hadn't had like a formal education at the same time we were building the Manhattan Project. So there's this big disconnect between the general population and how fast technology was moving. And sometimes it's just easier to, you know, believe your Uncle Bob or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And that all kind of culminated around the same time as well. Like, you know, those people moved into their adulthood and started raising children during the time Kennedy was president. And they're literally telling their kids, I don't know how jets work. You know, it's like, you know, I feel like there's kind of this, I always thought that probably had something to do with it too. It was just a whole generation coming up where it was like, I don't know. There are jets. Yeah. When I was a kid, couldn't fly. Now jets, who knows? Yeah. Aliens, maybe aliens.
I mean, that probably relates to the time we're living in now too, because, you know, going through an unprecedented pandemic that nobody's seen in 100 years, you know, like, what do you believe? Like your own common sense that is based in your own, you know, worldview that you've seen around you your whole life, or do you believe what the government's telling you? And obviously, like we've talked about, there's a lot of reasons to not believe the government necessarily. So, you know, I get where people are coming from for sure.
Yeah. Did you guys ever read Mothman Prophecies?
I never read the actual book. I watched the movie and I've read a lot about the case, obviously, or the whatever, the story and the bridge collapsing and all that.
Yeah. The book is a lot better than the movie.
I can imagine.
they didn't have to like shoehorn in a relationship.
Right.
It's really, really, it's a fun read is what I'll say.
I can imagine.
I love like there's a lot of focus on the Men in Black aspect of it because.
Yeah. Which kind of creeps me out, to be honest.
Oh, that creeps me out too. Like because there's all these cases of, I think like most people think the Men in Black thing is government officials coming in and talking to you. And like, I guess there is an aspect of that. Right. Of, you know, people coming in suits and, you know, the clearing the mind kind of thing, which
right.
is not a real thing, but, or maybe it is, I don't know.
Have a pin.
Yeah. But it's the, I guess like the real Men in Black traditional thing is, like aliens right. dressed as humans or like dressed as like trying to pass off as humans and come in to talk with people. And they go, who wrote that? Like John Keel, I believe is his name.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He goes into like more of that stuff. And that is fascinating.
Super creepy.
And as you said, yeah, super fucking creepy.
Yeah. The way, like I remember reading about some of the things where like just the unnatural ways they sort of act when they're interviewing people. And stuff. Oh man, I love that stuff. So creepy and interesting.
Yeah, what's the phrase for that when it's almost human?
It has uncanny valley.
Uncanny valley. Yeah, that stuff creeps me out more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's why conspiracy theories are so fun, is because there are little nuggets of truth
right
in there, and then it's ruined by people. But, you know, like that that young Asian woman that went missing in a hotel, and there's footage of her running throughout the hotel something.
Netflix has that documentary right now, right?
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it just came out like yesterday or something.
Oh, sweet. I'm definitely going to watch that. But yeah. Then, you know, not to ruin the Netflix documentary, but you should have known by now, it's been on the internet forever. They find her in the water, like the fresh water tank on the roof of the hotel, like stuffed in there. But like she went up on the roof alone.
They don't know how she got in and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. And she clearly looks scared, like getting in the elevator, but then there's nothing in there. I mean, it's just like little stuff like that, or like, you know, footage of actual Men in Black, in theory, coming and interviewing people at offices and then those people disappearing or whatever. You find those little traces on the internet and it's so fun and terrifying. And that's what makes you want to dig. But you can't take it too seriously. And I guess Nathan and I both had that in common growing up, wanting to research that stuff and finding it interesting. And I guess it's made its way into both of our music.
I mean, I'd venture to say that it's all sort of character stories, right? Like, you know, like anything, it's learning about people and what they do and what motivates them. And that's what you write songs about in general. So why not write about the weird sort of creepy stuff too, or the unusual stuff as well.
Right.
Yeah. That girl who, the water tower girl, that her name was Elisa Lamb.
Right. Yeah.
And that she, like, it, as you said, go watch the footage of her, like on the, like of the elevators and stuff like that. And it's really creepy because it's unsettling.
It is for sure.
And I'm sure it has, I kind of always go back to like the Occam's razor thing. It's like, if whatever the simplest, most practical explanation is more than likely it. And you can kind of go back to like mental health aspects with that.
Right.
But
that's what I always assumed.
The water tank thing, that is also just sounds incredibly scary. Like,
it does.
And what I imagine what happened with that is you go up to there and you're like, oh, I can go swimming in here because it's water. And then like you realize after going in, like, oh, it's not nearly as like, it needs to be a way higher for me to even reach back up to get out. And right. I'm sure she just kind of could never get out. And just imagine trying to like float for a minute there. Like that's doesn't sound fun at all, but
it's terrifying.
Your really. Clothes get heavy, all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Men in Black thing, I like there's a couple of like very specific little, examples that are in that book of just, as you said, like the uncanny valley thing where it's like them trying to act human as possible and then like completely fucking up. Like I can't remember, there was one example of like this couple who would always go to a restaurant and then within 5 minutes there would be a man in black trying to intimidate him. And like one time, like he came in and was sitting near a table next to them and I can't remember, like he didn't know how to like cut a steak or something like that. And there was also like, I can't remember exactly what he did. Something like, I'm going to mess this up. I can't remember what happened, but it was something clearly that he was trying to do to act normal in comparison to everyone else. And so then he became embarrassed by it because everyone was kind of staring at him. So he went to the bathroom. And then, like, he never came out of the bathroom. And then when they went to go look for him, he was gone, clearly. Yeah. That kind of stuff is always just.
You wonder, I mean, we could dive so deep under this. Because, like, you know, it all starts sort of with, like, people point to the Roswell accident as being sort of first contact in some ways. Or, like, early contact at any rate. And you wonder if, like, okay, so by the 60s that they're, like, learning. You know, by now they probably are running the government. Like, okay, so they once they learned to cut a steak, we were doomed, right?
Yeah.
It took them a couple decades to sort of get the ball rolling, and now, you know, I don't know.
They're just chugging Mountain Dews and doing donuts.
Yeah, right.
Mountain Dews. Well, they live in the Appalachia Mountains, like that's where West Virginia.
Yeah, now. Probably. Why not? It's a beautiful area.
That's why they have the dead zone out there, which is also one of my favorite conspiracy theories. Tom, you familiar with the dead zone?
I was going to say, give like the 2-minute spiel or like whatever. Well,
it's a radio, it's basically like a long range radio test site, but to use it effectively, or it's not even really projecting radio, it's listening also like to space and stuff. And so to do that, they can't have any like electrical current around it, or it creates static and interference. So there's a dead zone in West Virginia, and like as you get closer to this giant satellite, you get more and more strict about what can be in the area. So like there's a pretty big area near the site where you can't even drive a car that has like an alternator because it creates an electrical current. And, you know, people walk or ride bikes or have, I think there's like some form of golf cart they use or something that's fine. I don't know. But
they
you know,
it's Flintstones like, thing where they just run really fast in a vehicle on the ground.
Yeah. And then there's like, you know, you go out one ring further and it's like, well, you can have electrical in your house, but you can't have microwaves. And then it's like, you go out one ring for, you know,
interesting.
And it's like you gradually, as you get closer, that part's not a conspiracy. That's real. Like this is a real area in the US.
That's pretty fascinating.
And so, you know, how there's those people who experience like pain or discomfort or anxiety from electrical current, like just ambient electrical current in the air. Well, that's like a safe haven for those people. So there's also a like a huge community of these people who are affected by electrical current living there. And we don't even, and science doesn't even know, like medicine doesn't know yet if that's even a real
affliction thing,
or if it's just, you know, psychological. So you have this group of people who have like maybe a psychological, maybe a physical like disease in this area where you can't have any form of communication. Like you can't have cell phones or anything. And then the government just runs it all and you can't have a normal car. I mean, and those are like the factual parts. That's great. Like I've always wanted to visit there. And as we talked earlier, significant others keep you from doing stupid things. Cause she's like, no, like, no, you're just never going to come out. And then there'll be no way to know if you're there. And like, yeah, that's true. And it's in West Virginia, which, you know,
makes it weirder. Yeah.
Like, does anyone know before the Whites or whatever that movie is came out about the soft shoe dancer with Hank 3 in it?
Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia.
Yeah, that. Did anyone know anything about West Virginia before that?
It existed.
Like anything? There are coal mines there. It's pretty. Good music comes from there.
Christian Bale's in a movie that took
place
there.
You never really meet anyone from there.
No.
Aliens.
My buddy Charlie Stout, who lives here in Lubbock, or he's actually up in Turkey. He's from West Virginia, but if anyone knows Charlie Stout,
I was going to say that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also obviously like the Mothman prophecies. That was like Western West Virginia on like the Ohio border, I guess. So yeah, weird shit. The West Virginia, the Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. That was like for a moment there, that was always like the random quote that you would just throw out to your buddies of just different things said in that movie.
Yep. Yep. I'll never forget the shaking the pill bottle. Like that's the Boone County mating call.
Yeah. That is one of the best lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that little kid who sadly probably clearly ended up in the system at some point, but said, I'm going to kill him to death. In the back of a minivan just bouncing off the walls.
Yeah. That kid had some quotes of, this is for you, Dennis. And like,
yeah, this is for you, Dennis. this is good. Dennis.
This is Dennis. Yeah. There was, so I have a buddy named Tanner, and, they're like in the Taco Bell drive through and they see this people they know in the window, and they're all like, Tanner, they took her baby. And like, so I would just say that to Tanner. And then they're like, what's so bad is like those people clearly can't hear what she's saying, but so they're all like happy and just waving, and like it's like this horrible thing that's happened to them. And and then the lady gets up to the front. I don't know if you guys remember this part, but they're at Taco Bell and she's trying to order like quesadillas, and I guess they don't have it. So then she tries to order cheese sticks, and then they're like, we don't have cheese sticks. And they're like, well, what do you serve here?
man, this is a Taco Bell.
Yeah. Yeah. That's literally like before the, sir, this is a Wendy's.
Yeah.
I guess.
Man, I'd love to go to a West Virginia Taco Bell just to see what that's like, but
yeah.
why do you have funnel cake?
Right. We do have cheese sticks. Actually, we're just out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, chicken fries too. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, that show. I can't remember which one it was, but there's like that one of the younger sisters who, like, you could just tell smoked like a carton a day. So her voice was like,
"Oh yeah."
She was like, yeah. And it was like, they always called me the hot, hot one.
Yeah. I'm the sexy one. Like, whoa,
man. I watched that in college and it really like impacted me for a while. Like, I don't know. It stuck with me, just everything. I was big into Hank 3 at the time too. So it just sort of all kind of became this, I don't know. Maybe that's why I had to transfer. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I knew those people growing up. Those people were all over East and South Dallas when I was a kid.
It definitely has a similar vibe to East Texas in general, I think. You know, West Virginia and East Texas are not.
You go out and visit family in Quinlan, and you're going to find I'm the hot one for sure at the local bar.
Yeah.
Family reunions are always a great time, you know.
That's the you said you watched that in college. I think like that was one of the big selling points early on for Netflix, was because that was kind of like one of those early documentaries that was on.
Makes
there.
Sense.
Yeah. There's actually like, did you guys ever watch that Kings of Leon documentary called like Tallahassee Sky?
Uh-huh.
That was like,
so, no.
To me, that was exactly like, take your generic music documentary times Wonderful Whites of West Virginia equals Tallahassee, I guess, what is it, Tallahassee Sky? Because like, yeah, like you think of Kings of Leon, big rock band, all of their family though, rednecks.
Yeah.
And like, I guess like their dad was like a Pentecostal preacher there for a minute.
Right.
So all kinds of weird shit happened in there.
Courtney, who I've referenced obviously is my wife, she is a huge Kings of Leon fan and has been for a long time. And the band made, which I don't know, maybe y'all have seen, like home movies when they were making one of their albums sort of early on. It was a big album that I can't remember the title of.
Pre-Sex is on Fire.
I think it was that album was the one that they were recording when they made these videos. But because they talk about Sex is on Fire, and like make jokes about it and stuff. But at one point they go to like a family cookout or something, and boy, yeah, it's like they're Oklahoma, right? Is where they're from. Yeah, it's like real redneck Oklahoma. And it's funny because like they were already big enough to where they were dating supermodels. Like the guy that the lead singer's married to, it still is like a Victoria's Secret supermodel. She's there. We're like, oh, what does she think about all this? You know?
I was at their show where they broke up in Dallas and they stayed split for like multiple years.
Yeah, they only played three songs. Courtney was there too, I think. Because
they played more than that.
Is that the show that like Bird Shit was like
probably
like shitting on them?
It was
it said Smirnoff, so it's very likely.
Right, that would make sense. That is what happens there generally.
It's our giant outdoor amphitheater.
Changed venue. Names like 60 times. Yeah,
everyone mine and Nathan's age calls it Smirnoff. Our parents call it Starplex.
Yeah,
people younger than us call it Yellow Pages, or there are a couple other, Dos Equis Pavilion there for a minute.
Yeah, JEXA.
JEXA. So, like, you can tell how old someone is in Dallas depending on what they call this venue in town. And anyway, it was there. It was great. It's the best lawn seating, like, ever. It's just this giant wraparound hill. Super fun for, like, summer festival shows, you know? But, yeah, I went to go see them. And they made it through more than three songs. But, you know, they just weren't playing their hits yet. They were going to do like a 90-minute set. So you figure when that album came out, they had just put the album out that had Knocked Up on it before that, and Snake Charmer. And like, that was the album I actually liked back when they looked like a weird mod 70s band, and they had like bangs and mullets and just, you know, weird looking. By the time Sex on Fire came out, they had like, you know, deep V's and vests and jewelry and faux hawks or whatever. But so the majority of the audience was there to see like two songs. So they never got to see those songs. But overall, it's a pretty good show. I mean, he was complaining about his voice being bad, and that's why he quit. But like, I thought he sounded pretty good that day. But then it was hilarious because what's the lead singer's name?
Caleb.
They were like, you know, he left, and then he came back and tried like half a song and left again. It was too hot. I think it was like 100 and something that day. And like, you know, down in that cement bowl, it's even hotter. And he's probably getting shit on by birds, and you know, he was drunk and whatever. So he comes out and he tries again, and then he leaves again, and there's this long pause and everyone starts booing, and the drummer comes out and goes up to the mic. He's like, "Well, I guess the show's fucking over because Caleb's an asshole," or something like that. And then that was the band breaking up. And like, I got emails for years like saying, when they reschedule, you can come watch them again. And then like 5 years later, when I didn't care anymore, they finally came back.
We saw them a couple years ago at Smirnoff or whatever you want to call it. And I don't know if it was their grand return, but they played the whole show.
What I find amazing though is how like clearly like those first few records, they are selling like a shit ton of records by like any means. Like they're selling over 200,000 copies.
Yeah.
But like, I just pulled up the Wikipedia just for this. The one with Sex on Fire, like that's 2.5 million copies.
That's a lot.
And they just basically like, they went from the record before had 226,000 to 2.5 million. Like, that's
crazy.
That's ridiculous. And it's all because of Sex on Fire. And I feel like I gave them a hard time for that kind of quote unquote sellout aspect. But then at the same time now, like as a 30-year-old man, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that too, I guess.
Well, what's funny is like that song may not be that great. Although anytime it comes on, I leave it like on, you know. But the rest of the album's pretty solid, I think, in general. And they've got such a specific sound. I mean, I'm somebody who came to them much later because I always thought they were bad until Courtney sort of showed me more songs and stuff. But they've got a really consistent sound throughout all the albums that's like very much their own. Like you can tell it's a Kings of Leon song, and you can tell when somebody else is doing a song inspired by them, like, oh, that sounds like a Kings of Leon song. You know, which is a hard thing to do in like the 20
modern rock.
Yeah. The aughts and the tens and the 20s or whatever we're in now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, I was a fan on their records leading up to Sex on Fire. And then when that happened, they totally changed their image. I was like, oh, they sold out. And I thought it was lame. But then I guess it was the next record, like the B-side or whatever, was Cold Desert.
Yep.
Or whatever. And that was a song that brought me back around, and I kind of forgave them for the sellout because I was at a frat party in Abilene, and it was like, you know, when the party is waning and the party music goes off and the slow jams get turned on and it's just 20 dudes in a garage swing back and forth and crying or whatever. You know, that part of the party.
My favorite part.
And that happened, and they did a fade out and then a fade back in. And I just had somebody tell me the story before I heard the song about how it's about their friend who died. And like, they were all so wasted when they recorded it. They didn't know they had even recorded it. And they went back in the studio the next day and they found it like, you know, recorded. And we're all just like, it's just one of those weird bro moments that happens when you're like 19 and never happens again the rest of your life, where like the first time dudes feel emotion together, you know,
an awakening. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, oh, we can all have feelings. Like at the same time, like in front of each other. So Kings of yeah. Leon was that moment in my life. I don't know what that means or if it's embarrassing or not, but
hey, I mean,
that's when you became a songwriter. Happened.
I know. It sounds like a very monumental moment. Yeah, they have a new record coming out in March, and I'm excited for it because, I mean, what else am I going to do?
The first couple songs that they've put out are I really like, actually. I think they're pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where, as you mentioned, like the consistency of the sound of like what they sound like, but what I've kind of also, I didn't think they would be a band like this. But they do feel like they've grown too as like
right.
adults, you know, like they're like, if you look at them now, they're like, they're, those dudes are like 40 years old. Right. So like, they're like dads and like married and shit. So I think like I don't want to make it sound like they're making like a dad rock album or something like that, but it feels like they're making like a 40-year-old
dude. To some
degree.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's going to be like, yeah, dad rock, but not like Wilco dad rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be more like
rock.
Rock.
Yeah. It is funny because I feel like country sort of allows for that to happen more than things like rock music or pretty much any other genre, maybe. Except jazz, you're supposed to be old from the beginning, right? Is that how that works?
Yeah. The Kings of Leon will age into an Americana band. I put it one, they're one record away from, you know, putting out an early 90s-esque Tom Petty record.
Sounds great. I mean, I'd listen to that.
Which if that came out now, that would squarely be Americana, which is so weird to think about.
Yeah. I think that like Caleb should put a solo, Caleb should put a solo country record out. Like just like even if it's like a 60s or 70s style, just straight country record. That's the turn that he needs to do, but whatever.
I would take the time to listen to it. He's a good vocalist. I like the way he sings.
Yeah.
I still jam out to Charmer off that one record.
Yeah.
Charmer.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. But we've been rolling for a minute, man.
Yeah.
It's, it's been nice talking with y'all.
Yes, you as well. Thanks for having us.
Now,
I don't know what we talked about, but
it was fun at any rate.
I think
we can say go listen to our records. We have records either out or coming out.
All right, that is it for this one. Be sure to go out and buy Ottoman Turks 2 out this Friday, March 5th. Stop on over at the merch store and the Patreon. Visit our presenting partners over at Desert Door, the Blue Light Live, Hot Damn Coffee, and Wild Gallery. And yeah, I'll see y'all later this week for another episode.